Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, welcome back. Second hour of the show on this MLK Day, and I will not dare say the entire name of the holiday for fear of getting booted from my job. And actually, this is, it is a sad holiday for me because it was a year ago today that fellow film critic and media personality Kevin Steincross made a simple mistake, a pronunciation error. He just made a mistake. Somebody heard it, complained. Kevin went on with an apology on Fox 2. Should have probably never done that, because if he had done it or hadn't done it, I don't think it would have been in the Post-Dispatch, and then he would still have his job and his career. But it's just unfortunate. I still can't believe that that happened. And it happened with very few people being disgusted by it. I certainly was. But there were so many people that bought into the notion that if you say something like that, you have to have deeply hidden racist thoughts. And I just thought it was unfortunate. Dan Buff is with me this afternoon. He reviews movies for KSDK. You knew Kevin. We saw him recently. I think we've seen him at a couple of the screenings. But Dan, not to drag you into a conversation about race, but I'm kind of dragging you into a conversation about race.
Drag away.
It was just such an unfortunate thing because, and you know, Kevin, I said this before too. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody in St. Louis in media who probably is the least racist
just
or
a sweet
bigoted
guy.
Person. Right. So it was just unfortunate the way that happened. And he just disappeared. And I'm guessing, I have only chatted with him briefly, but my guess is that there was a check that was cut. There was an NDA because he can't talk about it.
No.
I've hammered his bosses at Fox. I think they were just chicken. You know what?
I wrote a piece for my own website, and I've shared it everywhere I could about this is just wrong. I mean, it's just everybody can make a mistake. And they shouldn't lose everything. Because he's not just going to lose his job. He's in, if he wants to work again, he's going to have to go off probably out of the city. I mean, and now he's probably going to possibly lose his St. Louis film critic's place, possibly.
I hope that he was given a really big check. Because here's the reality of the situation, Dan. You know this. He's a member of the Critics' Choice Association. Kevin was one of those guys, and I don't know how he did it because there's a lot of travel involved. He would go to Hollywood probably three times a month, if not every weekend, sitting down with cast members, doing stories about the people in the movies that we watch on a regular basis. He had a great relationship with some of the A-list stars in Hollywood. But because of what happened here, you have movie studios, because of the PC culture that we're in, that would never want to risk, even though he did nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong.
He's on a red carpet somewhere with Kevin Hart. Or who knows? And then somebody says something, or even if it gets misconstrued, it doesn't matter. The facts in these situations don't matter.
No.
Really doesn't. What matters is what ended up happening as a result of that. And because of that, his whole reputation is tarnished. I think it's just disgusting.
It is. It's like if the facts were at the destination of the GPS, and in that case, it's just going to be rerouted over and over again. Like if Kevin Hart knew the whole story, he would probably go, oh, man, I understand.
Right.
Kevin Hart, gosh, if you watch the Netflix documentary, he's made 150 mistakes, yet he continues to be Kevin Hart. So he should understand, but he'll never get there because the whole story will just remain under the carpet.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I screamed from the rooftop. I wrote columns.
Yeah, man. I tried
to get people on board. And, once the NAACP got involved, there are people listening right now, white and black. They just feel deep down in their heart, and I don't know what you can do about this, that if somebody says something like that, of course, it came. What happened to Steincross came on the heels of that other guy in Syracuse or Rochester, New York, or wherever that was. But I've heard people make this case, and when it happened a year ago, we took calls about it. But there will be people that will insist that there's no way that somebody can say something like that if they don't have racism that's hidden in their heart or in their brain. But as I pointed out, all you'd really have to do is talk to a linguist. A linguist will explain to you how the words can be melded together in a way where you
easily
have the mispronunciation. Yes, it's not. It really isn't that hard to understand, but people don't want to hear that side of the story.
Yeah, on the Facebook, every time I posted that article, I had the same person would just go, well, he has to have this in his soul somewhere. Like, no, it's
just a
mistake. If you are put in front of a microphone like you are, I mean, you're on the air 5 days a week, multiple hours. It's you know how hard it is to make sure every word is said right, especially the right words.
And I won't even say the word because now it's in our heads. But Martin Luther, with Luther and Junior, mm-hmm. that's where you get the King and the Junior. An expert will tell you how mistakes like that matter. But I'm even uncomfortable talking about it because I don't want to get on the front page of the
now,
paper.
Now, that's the aftershock of that kind of thing. Now, whenever I say that, even to in my own house, I go, slow down.
I really do.
I do, yeah.
In the past week.
Yeah, that's what you do now. That's the different world we live in now, a year later.
Well, let's talk about something a little bit more positive than that, and that's baseball. And I have a variety of stories. I do want to talk a little movie stuff with you this hour.
Of course.
Because the SAG Awards took place last night. There was another interesting speech from Joaquin Phoenix, and most of the winners from the Critics' Choice Awards and the Golden Globes won, but we'll kind of break that down a little bit later. We had Mike Schilt, Schilty, as I call him, on the Reardon Roundtable.
He's such an easy interview.
He is, though. Friday afternoon, he's a newly engaged man. And he came in for about 10 minutes on Friday afternoon. We talked a little baseball. The cheating scandal has heated things up. You spent a good portion of your weekend over at the winter warm-up, right?
Yeah, I mean, every player, coach, manager, owner has been asked about that all weekend. And Schilty, probably in the good thing about him is he gives you enough material for quotes. I mean, he will give you like a two-paragraph answer. And he talked about, what you can do and what you can't do on the field. There's a kind of a thing going around to eliminate all technology from the field, any kind of technology
device.
Well,
that's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I mean, that'd be too much to do, especially with the way that social media and the way the game's kind of broadcast across the world. But, yeah, Schilty is pretty clear. They made every effort to say, look, we know what's right and wrong. The hitting coach, Jeff Albert, was brought up, and Schilty has said he's never come to me with anything about, technological edge. So, yeah, Schilty's good. He'll give you a full answer. It's been pretty much just like that's not the Cardinal way. That's been the mantra.
What about, and I don't know if you had a chance to talk with fans, but just here's a montage of a response from fans.
If you love sports, you have to honor the integrity of the game. And they betrayed our trust.
When they use a camera from center field to steal signs, I feel like that is very wrong.
If the whole sign cheating and all that stuff, if that didn't happen, then I'm pretty sure the whole World Series would have went a whole different way.
I don't know. Maybe it would have, but what are the lingering effects of this, I guess, would be the question.
It's one of those things where every manager and, if you ever try to, if there's ever any kind of use, because, Jeff Albert, the hitting coach, he uses all these different kind of ways for hitters to improve. But whenever you use technology in a sentence, if you're a hitting coach, a pitching coach, a manager, that's going to be called into question now with what the Astros have done. They've kind of changed, as the Joker would say in The Dark Knight, they've changed things dramatically throughout the whole game.
What was the deal? And I want to look this up because when we were here on Friday, Jack McDowell was making these allegations about Tony La Russa. I thought La Russa had responded to that over the weekend. Did he not respond at all?
He did, but of course the response by La Russa wasn't as broadcast as loudly as the Jack McDowell. I know I saw La Russa's a link to that once, but I didn't see much more from that.
I didn't either. And, I'll be honest, I've said this before. I sort of get busy with family stuff over the weekend. So I sort of dip out of the news coverage. But even looking right now, doing a Google search, there's not a lot there with what McDowell said. So, it's hard to tell. And then you have the whole allegation from Who was it? Beltran's niece, right? That said that Altuve and somebody else wore the buzzers, but that has been denied, so it's hard to know how far some of this actually went.
Yeah, of course, the only one really breaking the news is Tommy Pham showing the picture of Altuve's jersey with a little bit of a lining going up, which could be a wire or a buzzer. But, again, it's just for the Astros alone, it's going to be a big thing because can that team do what they did without this? And if they happen to falter, imagine all the aftershock from that if they're not as good or even half as good. But it's definitely going to affect the game and how it's perceived.
Yeah, you would think so. Where do you stand on the, well, there's Yankee fans and Dodgers fans that are not too happy about this, saying it did cost them maybe a World Series. Do you vacate the World Series victory?
You know, it's just so hard to do. It brings me back to the, you know, the Rams and the Patriots when they played that Super Bowl and the Patriots were kind of accused of, you know, watching practices, stealing signals, stealing calls. But I'm not sure you could substitute the way they just kind of punch the Rams offense in the mouth the way in that game. I can't sure you can take away all of that. So I'm not, I mean, maybe kind of a little asterisk next to the win, but you can't really take it away.
All right, tell me about the winter warm-up and your thoughts as, you know, we talk baseball, we talk the cheating scandal, but we talk baseball and spring baseball and the 2020 season with Mike Schilt. There is a lot of excitement. There are still some question marks. There is no Nolan Arenado. I don't know where you are with that thing. You know, that was kind of like, it's all of a sudden, oh, maybe we can get him and then we
it
can't.
It just came on, yeah.
It's been kind of quiet over the weekend, though.
Today, Bill DeWitt Jr. kind of went to the podium and said the payroll is going to be around 170, but he admitted when you take on a guy like Arenado, who would be a $35 million a year player, he admitted that salary has to go the other way. So that tells you that Matt Carpenter or Dexter Fowler, who both make around $16 to $18 million, would have to go there. They both have no trade clauses, even though Carpenter said over the weekend that he'd be willing to waive his in the right situation. So to make that kind of move, there's a lot of things that have to line up, you know, because he has an opt-out in 2 years. You have to send salary the other way. But it's Nolan Arenado. A guy is like a Scott Rolen type at third base. He can hit. I do believe that, like Matt Holliday, when he left Colorado, he can hit away from Colorado. So I think it'd be a big move, but there's so many things that have to fall into place for them to make that kind of a
but
monster deal.
But it does
deal.
Seem like that those pieces, now it could blow up. This may not happen.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a better chance that it doesn't happen. But what's interesting is everybody is explaining the same way that you just did.
Sure.
Look, it's not impossible.
Oh, no, it's not. And the more it's talked about, the more John Morosi or Ken Rosenthal, when the verified MLB reporters, when they're putting it out there, because the Rockies know they have a window. If they wait till the end of the season, then he only has 1 year before the opt-out. So the biggest thing is going to be the Cardinals may want the Rockies to ask for a package that's opt-out in 2 years. But the Rockies may want that, hey, he's got a seven years left on his contract. So that's the biggest hurdle, is what is going to be the asking price. The Cardinals have the players to move. They have so many players that are not going to, you know, you can only put 9 guys on a field. So it's available to do, but it just depends if the Cardinals want to take that chance that he may bolt, or not bolt, renegotate, which shouldn't be a problem. Go ahead.
I think part of the problem here is patience, because if you read through the tea leaves of what Mo said in the last week, even here on this station, what Mike Schilt has said too, it might be, even if it would happen, it might take several weeks, if not months, to develop.
Yeah,
leading into the spring.
This could be a big July 31st kind of thing. Like if the Cardinals are once again, like they did last year, winning a lot of 3-2 and 2-1 games, because understand, they haven't done anything to really improve this offense. They are hoping on a bunch of ifs. If Carpenter can do what he did for most of his career, is Goldschmidt now going to be a guy that's half of what he was in Arizona? Can Yadier Molina still produce offensively? DeYoung just was lost from like May on. So, you know, you're hanging the division hopes, and now you're back on top. You know, the Cubs and the Brewers are taking a step back. The Reds are taking a couple steps forward, but not enough to really get in the top
two.
You
would think not.
Yeah, unless they really get a lot of things going right. But the Cardinals have an area here to not just be division, but maybe to be, you know, pennant guys. I mean, they got to the Final Four last year, but they got demolished by the Nationals, who did win the World Series. But the Cardinals didn't put up a fight because they couldn't score runs.
A lot of work to do. We'll kind of hold hopes out for Arenado or somebody else. Dan, hang on. I wanted to ask you, too, because I saw some of your tweets. I think it was Adam Wainwright who took a FaceTime call from
midway through his media session. The phone rings and he goes like, I have to pick this up, and he picks it up, and of course he takes the call. So if a guy's gonna take a call during a media session, it has to be kind of fun. And it's Yadi Molina. He turns the phone around and Yadi goes, where are you? Oh, you're with those guys. and Yadi Molina, who is, I mean, at least in my time interview him, he's never really a guy that wants to give you too much. He's a baseball guy. Wayno's the opposite. He gives you a ton. But yeah, he had to interrupt.
Well, Yadi wasn't in then for the warm-up, right?
He wasn't. He's coming in after, I think when I left, it was Wong, Coton Wong and Yachty were the last two to sign. But, you know, the big thing with Yachty, they're going to ask him what's the plans after this season.
He was there. He just was there after that call to Waino.
I want to say, since they're both on the stage signing when I left, that he was, like, behind the stage getting ready to go on sign.
I got you. All right. Dan Buffa, hang on. We got a bunch of other things to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Including a story. This is baffling to me. About two different women who killed their husbands with Visine, the eye drops. Not fake news.
Wow.
I know, right? I'll explain, not to incentivize anyone out there, but we'll run down some bizarre angles of that. Also talk a little bit about the SAG Awards last night in Joaquin Phoenix. I know you have something to say about that, Buffa.
Yeah.
We're coming back with more. All right, well, Dan Buffa from KSDK reviews movies over there. Spent some time talking movie awards with me in the past couple of months. We'll talk about the SAG Awards and Joaquin Phoenix. And Brad Pitt had sort of an epic speech last night, Dan, as well. And he looks like our Missouri guy's going to win an Oscar in a few weeks. Looks like he's going to be the favorite for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, sure. I really don't think there's two locks at the Oscars right now. It's probably Laura Dern for Marriage Story and Brad Pitt. Even more Brad Pitt Moore for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Hold your thoughts on that, because we'll talk some movies a little later.
Yeah.
So I saw this headline, and this was clickbait that worked for sure. The headline was "How Visine Eye Drops in the Mouth Can Kill." Here are two cases now. I'm going to play an ABC News piece about a woman named Lana Sue Clayton, who last week was sentenced to 25 years for voluntary manslaughter. There's a bit of a movie reference in here.
Oh, man, here we go.
Come on, Dan Buffa, you know all these little movies. What was the movie? It was a very popular movie that featured pouring Visine into a drink to make someone sick. I didn't remember this, by the way. In fairness, I did not remember.
Wedding Crashers?
It was Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Very good.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. But it's worse than that. So this is actually true, and I'm going to give you some details. This is from an ABC News story.
This morning, a South Carolina woman is sentenced to over 20 years in prison after pleading guilty to killing her husband with eye drops.
I am truly sorry.
Prosecutors say, motivated by greed, nurse Lana Clayton secretly poisoned her wealthy husband by putting eye drops in his water for 3 days, taking his computer and phone so he couldn't call for help.
He lay there helpless Thursday and Friday, waking up periodically from his misery, thirsty, drinking more water.
All right, now she says her defense was, didn't work by the way, that he was abusive and she was just trying to hurt him.
Lana claimed her husband, Stephen Clayton, was abusive and that she poisoned him only once, hoping to punish, not kill him.
I did impulsively put the Visine in Stephen's drink, and I did it with the intent to make him sick and uncomfortable.
Her attorney says she expected the result to be like this scene from the movie Wedding Crashers, where Bradley Cooper's character gets sick after drinking eye drops.
Oh, no.
In an exclusive interview with ABC News, Stephen's sister Rosemary says the reality was much darker.
I think my brother was screaming for his life.
Stephen Clayton was found dead on July 2018 at the bottom of the stairs of his Lake Whaley home. Police initially thought he'd suffered a fatal fall or a heart attack, but Rosemary says Lana immediately started acting strangely.
Financial records, papers, artwork, mementos, everything that you can think of that she could throw into the fire pit, she threw into the fire pit, including their bed.
Yeah, she threw their actual bed, she threw into the fire pit. So that, Dan, that is one story. Then there's the story. I'd never heard of this before, and I did not remember that scene from Wedding Crashers. And I think that you have to be a little cautious here. Let's just say this. If you try to kill your spouse or anyone else with Visine, they're probably going to do an autopsy, and they're going to catch you, right? Just so you know.
Imagine.
So I'm not trying to do this as an instructional radio segment.
We're not influencing you.
Let's hope not. Joshua Lee Hunsaker, former paramedic, North Carolina, charged with first-degree murder. They had another story on this, and this was an ABC segment. Hunsaker and his wife had been high school sweethearts. Her death had a sweetheart of an insurance payout, $250,000, according to Michael Banks, who is a reporter for the Shelby Star. So Hunsaker resisted an autopsy being done before his wife's body was cremated. The North Carolina Department of Insurance said that these circumstances led to an investigation by the Gaston County Police Department and Homeland Security investigations that resulted in allegations of fraudulent life insurance claims. Eventually, this guy was arrested. This just happened December 19th. He's been charged with first-degree murder. And here's the science of it, Dan, because this is where, again, I'm not trying to be instructional, but eye drops like Visine, Murine Plus, and Clarine are marketed as ways for you to get the red out of your eyes. Remember, we remember this from a long time.
Sure.
You could thank, and this is where I'm going to do my best to pronounce this word, tetrahydrozoline for helping us do this. Tetrahydrozoline
yeah.
is a chemical that's in many of the drops. It's a member of the imidazole family. Doctors are laughing right now at my pronunciation, that can serve as decongestants and vasoconstrictors. Vaso stands for vessel, as in blood vessel, and constrictor means to make more narrow. When blood vessels become more narrow, less blood can flow through them. Since blood is red, unless you're a Vulcan, less blood may mean less redness. So what this article says, eye drops have to go into your, this is where it's weird, into your eyes, not into your mouth or other orifices. Otherwise, they'd be called other orifice drops, not eye drops, right? They're also called drops and not buckets because you put like two or three drops in
there. Yeah, little drops.
And you're not supposed to do it more than six times a day. So if you stay within those limits, you're fine. But if the eye drops go down your mouth, that's not a good thing. So it can be absorbed through your gastrointestinal tract into your main blood circulation. It can go to your heart, your central nervous system. Then it can get to slow your heart rate, lower your blood pressure, all these things that happen. In these two cases, even small amounts, and this one guy, by the way, was really big. The one that the woman killed, the wife was a little bit more petite, but the guy was real big guy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And she still put enough in there.
Took a whole bottle, probably.
Right. I'm trying to think if there's any more details here. But, I mean, this is a good lesson for... I had no idea. It's
no.
a good lesson for parents because you want to keep those things
away from your kids.
Away from
yeah.
the kids.
Kids go, what's this? Oh, yeah, spray this around everywhere. No, you don't want to do that. The stuff that can help you can also kill you.
Man, I will tell you that that was one that just completely caught me by surprise. And then the guy, Bruce Lee, who's a physician and scientist and professor, says, in general, don't use the Wedding Crashers as a model for your behavior. That's probably good advice, right?
The whole movie, really.
Owen Wilson's hair wouldn't fly on most people, he said. That's probably a good point. And do not put eye drops in anyone's drink or even just a few drops to prank someone. That would be terrible. Not a good prank. And you could certainly kill someone and find yourself
in
prison for life. So just keep that in mind. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some stuff with the SAG Awards.
Yeah.
Interesting speeches last night.
Yes.
And I have an audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the hour. Dan Buffa is joining me this afternoon on KMOX to talk about some movies and some other stuff. We get into Total Information PM at 4 o'clock. Time for a news update. Alex is here. Then we're back with more on KMOX. All right, welcome back. I'm going to take an unscheduled day off tomorrow. Dan Buffa is here from KSDK. We're going to talk some SAG Awards and some other things here. I don't know if I know this about you, Dan. Are you a pet guy? You have dogs or cats?
I have way too many pets. My wife is a rescue artist.
Oh, good for her.
We have three cats and two dogs, so...
Well, you'll be able to relate with this. So I have three dogs, three cats. We've sort of kept the three dogs, three cats for years. And then we have we lost a dog in the past couple of years. We lost a cat in the next couple of years. And unfortunately, my oldest cat, we're going to have to put to sleep tomorrow. And
I
know this may sound weird for people if they're not pet owners. And I think that cats, for whatever reason, are looked at differently than dogs. But she is 16, going on 17 years old, and is just all of a sudden just turned into a situation where it's just not going to, you know, sustain.
Everything's shutting down. Yeah.
And it's I can't even believe I can talk about it right now without getting, you know, emotional because she's a really special cat. So anyway, I don't want my wife to have to do this on her own tomorrow.
Of course not.
And we don't want to prolong the agony. So
yeah, we lost a cat. Yeah, we lost. We had to take our cat and my poor cat Jack. We've had him since we were together in 2002. He passed away in 18. He actually got down off the back seat in our car, laid down on the floor mat, and just went in his own time on the way to the vet. And I swear, I just crumbled when I got there.
Well, I will tell you that there was an expectation that maybe that was going to happen here in the last couple of days. And, you know, it's funny. So most of my animals are named after Pixar characters. So you will have, and for years it was funny because it's very confusing, even to my own mother, who probably doesn't get it to this day. She's a female cat. Her name is Jack-Jack. Dan, you know where that's from, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's the baby in The Incredibles. Yeah. And in the first movie, did not play a huge role, but we always thought it was kind of funny. It was funny because I lived in the People's Republic of Wisconsin at the time, and I went down to Burlington, Wisconsin. I found an ad in a newspaper for someone who was, giving cats away, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't even a rescue agency. So I go down there, and this was truly like the Catwoman. There's a woman, there's cats all over her
all
house.
Over, I imagine.
All over. Probably, not the most hygienic situation.
No.
So we walk in there. I'm like, oh man, what did I get myself into? And we were looking for I wanted a black cat because I had lost a cat, my cat Max. I had him from my days at Mizzou. And this cat, you know how they are. Sometimes they kind of take to you. And
they
she
do.
She was very unique. So we adopted her, and I don't know if you've gone through this process ever. I'm sure you have with all the animals where you get into what the hell do you call the cat or the dog, right? And if you have kids, it gets even more confusing. So we were driving back into Milwaukee from Burlington with this new kitten, and Becky and I are like, what are we going to name it? And I said, we're just going to name it the first thing that we see on like a billboard, because we were tossing some names and they didn't work. So the first billboard that I see was for something called the Pottawatomie Casino, which is in Milwaukee. And the entertainment was Tony Danza. So we came very close to naming this cat Tony Danza, which I still think would have been very, very funny. But we named her Jack-Jack anyway. She, she's going to leave the planet tomorrow, and I'm going to have to go deal with that. So
man,
it's just a tough... this one's hitting me. I'm actually surprised I can talk about it. This one's hitting me harder than past, and I'm not exactly sure why.
I would not wish them my worst enemy to have to go put a pet down that they've gotten attached to.
That's tough. It is tough. Anyway, let's talk about the SAG Awards and what happened last night. For the most part, here was the big surprise. SAG does not nominate movies. It is an actors organization. I am a SAG AFTRA member, so I was able to
vote
in these awards last night. But they have, instead of best movie, they have best ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm.
And Parasite won that award last night. This is a Korean film which has garnered a fair amount of critics' accolades.
It's the first one to not have to be to win and not have one of the cast members be nominated individually, I think.
Which is rather historic.
It's historic, yeah.
How did that happen? Now, I'm a little bit more lukewarm on Parasite than a lot of other critics. I thought it was interesting. I just didn't think it was the best movie of the year or on my top 10 list.
I thought it was great. The set, I mean, what the story they're trying to tell, just for me, I just kind of forgot about it a few days later. Like, I haven't forgotten about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Irishman.
That's a good way to talk about it.
For me, it's just, well, those, at the end of the year, you know how it is. They come in droves, all these big movies. But for that, I liked it. I liked it a lot, but it just drifted from my mind more than others did.
Yeah, it just didn't make the impression that it made on some other people. But again, I think that when you have...
Even JoJo was kind of had a really good cast altogether.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what happens, though, you got a bunch of people voting for different movies, and this one sort of came up the middle with some vote splitting. All right, so Joaquin Phoenix wins for Best Actor. Here's what he says last night.
When I started acting again and going to auditions, I'd always get to, like, the final callback. And I think many people know what that's like. And there would always be, like, two other guys that I was up against. And we'd always lose to this one kid. And no actor would ever say his name because it was like too much. But every casting director would whisper in that, it's Leonardo, it's Leonardo. Who is this Leonardo? Leonardo, you have been an inspiration for over 25 years to me and so many people. I thank you very, very, very much.
That was pretty cool that he also mentioned Heath Ledger. Listen.
Really, I'm standing here on the shoulders of my favorite actor, Heath Ledger. So thank you and good night.
Yeah, a little shout out there at the end of the acceptance speech for his portrayal.
Good for him, man. Yeah.
No, he's heading toward an Oscar, as weird as he is.
Yeah, I mean, really, he is. I mean, it's one of those things where I think he even started to get up before they even finished his name, because he's just winning everything. And I was a guy at the very end of the year, I put Adam Sandler for Uncut Gems in front of him. But even seeing now, I can't deny him winning the awards.
Yeah,
it's a great performance.
Sandler as well, and he was not even nominated for a SAG award.
No, even though he had the best Twitter response. Now the Sandman can stop wearing suits, which is good.
He was out there campaigning, though.
He was. He said, if I don't win, I'm making a bad movie. And he's made a few of those in the past few years, so hopefully he doesn't.
He was joking about it, but I think it was something he kind of really wanted. And you and I are on the same page on that movie, Uncut Gems. It is not maybe a movie for everyone. It's very unconventional, but man,
it's so original,
away.
Though.
Yeah, I said
I don't think you're going to see something like that every year, even every 3 or 4 years. It's just something very original.
All right, so Brad Pitt went to J school with Brad Pitt, Dan, back in 1984. You know, it's funny, I had the real life encounter with Pitt because in a couple of different ways. I had a friend of mine named Donna Skaggs, no idea where she ended up. We went to the Prince concert here in St. Louis, the Purple Rain tour, took her on a date, never heard from her again. We weren't really dating, though. We were just friends.
Yeah.
But then she disappeared, which is weird. That's just kind of a I digress moment. But if you were in the journalism school in the advertising sequence, you had a project that you did, and her project was a fashion show. There used to be a mall in Columbia called the Biscayne Mall. It was there before the Columbia Mall. And she tapped me as the MC because I was a radio guy.
Sure.
Working in rock radio at the time. She said, would you be the MC at the fashion show? I said, yes, I will. I didn't get paid anything, but it was a nice thing to do.
It was cool.
Well, Brad Pitt was one of the models. That was my brush with Brad Pitt at Mizzou until years later when... So I had an opportunity, you know, Inside Edition or some of those other shows.
Sure.
Well, what they do is, and I think they probably even do it now, let's say that they're in Hollywood and they have a story to do on St. Louis. So they'll call Dan Buffer, they'll call someone else and say, hey, could you go, you know, it's a stringer job is what it's called. You're basically doing the interview with someone, but you're not getting credit on the air. They use it in their story. So I go to Inside Edition calls. They want to do this. They want to do it on Brad Pitt. And he almost graduates from the University of Missouri. He leaves like two weeks before graduation. Turned out pretty well for him. So I go sit down with this journalism professor that loves Brad Pitt, and she's talking about Brad this and Brad that, and you know how Brad did this this senior project that was so neat. I'm like, oh, tell me about the project. Well, it was this Men of Mizzou calendar that he did, and I just want you to know that Brad, if you just want to come back and finish off the. You know, the work that you have will get you your degree. I'm like, wait a second. So I had a roommate. This guy's name was Mel Berger. All right. He's from St. Louis, from Clayton. And he put out a Men of Mizzou calendar that had Brad Pitt as part of the calendar. He was like Mr. July or something like that. So after that interview, I called Mel. I said, hey, I just heard this really interesting story from a professor, Brad Pitt's, about how he had this Men of Mizzou calendar. Wasn't his. That was the very definition of fake news.
Because, you are fake news.
Now, I'm not alleging that Brad Pitt was making that up, but I'm alleging that the professor, in the way that she told the story, did not have accurate information. I don't know if he lied about it. I actually told him at one point a few years ago when I saw him at one of the awards. I said, hey, I at one point, because I had this Men of Mizzou calendar in my possession. I had no idea what happened. They had to buy it back from the... from Mel, the university did, because they had football players on it, and that was technically an NCAA violation. So the calendar itself ended up being more of a collector's item than anything else. But here's his speech from last night, Brad Pitt.
I got to add this to my Tinder profile.
He's holding the award there, the SAG award. The actor, as they say.
Thank you. My brothers, my sisters, this means so much. More than I can possibly fathom. I want you to know I watch everything. I watch you all, and the work has been mesmerizing, so I thank you. I want to thank my co-stars, Leo, Margot Robbie, Margot Robbie's feet, Margaret Qualley's feet, Dakota Fanning's feet. Seriously, Quentin has separated more women from their shoes than the TSA. Now, we all know what we do is a team sport, and we elevate each other. And I got to work with some amazing, amazing people. Mr. Pacino, Mr. Dern, Kurt Russell, Leo, Dakota, Tim... wait, where are you guys? Miss Butters, a bunch of the new generation, Margaret Qualley, Austin Butler. Anyway, you all elevated my game. I certainly hope I did the same for you.
This is one of those, Dan, this is one of those awards. I mean, I think the SAG Award, the Golden Globe, the Critics' Choice, SAG Award is voted on by actors and by members of the union, like myself. But again, this is that moment where they sort of realize, I think, that I'm going to be delivering this next speech. It's not 99% or 100%, but most likely on Oscar night. This is what, you know, maybe Pitt is having a recollection or a realization of.
Yeah.
Hang on here.
Let's be honest, more. It was a difficult part. The guy who gets high, takes his shirt off, and doesn't get on with his wife.
That's
a big stretch. It's big.
For people who aren't aware, now I think Brad's sober now. Yeah. He had a reputation. Yeah. I can neither confirm or deny this, that there were times where he would show up for junket interviews and maybe the red eyes were giving something. I'm just going to say that. So he's kind of making fun of himself to a certain extent here.
His National Board of Review speech, he said that Bradley Cooper helped him get sober.
Right. I remember him referring to that.
Listen,
and by the way, they cut to Jen Aniston right there.
And she melted it up. Right. She melted it up.
I love our community so much. It's been amazing to me. I've met so many amazing people along the way. Each of us in this room, you know, we know pain. We know loneliness. We bring that to the screen. We know moments of grace. We've had moments of wisdom. We bring that to the screen. We've all had a laugh at our ridiculousness. And we know funny. And we bring that to the screen. And goddamn, I think that's a worthy endeavor.
All right, there he is, Brad Pitt, on his way to winning an Oscar. And I think
he's certainly
come a long way since when he left Columbia. I think he had some TV work and then Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
And ever since then,
River Runs Through It. I mean,
no looking back, right?
Yeah, I mean, and this is great because he's telling people how to accept awards. I mean, at the Globes, he just said people to be nice to each other. At the Board of Review, he talked about getting sober. And now he just has fun with this one. He just, you know, you have to get up there and just, you know, be appreciative, be generous, but also have some fun because you have the world at your in your hands at the moment.
I don't think he's one of those actors that I look at for a big range in a performance. You know, I loved what he did in Inglourious Basterds. I don't know if this is better than some of the other contenders in that category, but I do think that he's a powerful guy, and the one thing that he leaves his mark on and will continue to for the rest of his career is producing. I mean, he's a big player
yes.
when it comes to producing.
And really, he doesn't really put his name really ahead of it. He just kind of has the plan B. But he does. He picks really potent stories, politically charged stories, too, a lot.
And every once in a while, he talks about Springfield, Missouri.
Dan. Yes.
Hey, thanks for coming in here. We'll be doing a preview of the Oscars as we get through this movie season.
Yes.
Dan Buffer from KSDK. Always great to hang out with you on KMOX.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Dan.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, look, CNN has a headline up right now. I'm looking at the monitor. Thousands protest peacefully for gun rights. They have to be terribly disappointed after scaring the heck out of people about this gun rally in Richmond, Virginia. Nothing happened. You had law-abiding citizens that surrounded the Capitol, thousands and thousands of them, some armed with semi-automatic weapons. And this is also seen as something or interpreted by some of the media say, oh, this is a bunch of white supremacists, right? Well, this guy, he's black, was there, and he explains the reason.
Okay, why am I out here? Basically, I'm out here because I got roped into it by the group of guys you see standing to my right. But the main, the real reason I'm out here is I do not support in any way, shape, or form Governor Northam's and the Democrats' gun control. What I also don't support is the fact that every news piece you've seen on this weekend, they've always brought up the issue of race as though it's nothing but white rednecks and hillbillies out here who care for the Second Amendment. When actually, black Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, Americans in general care about the Second Amendment. I work at a gun store part-time, and I can't tell you the number of customers I see of all races, all colors, all creeds who care about the Second Amendment and who just want to peaceably live their lives, enjoy their rights, and the Second Amendment.
Yeah, exactly. Americans. It doesn't have to be black Americans, yellow Americans. That is why that was your cut of the day.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!